Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 130. We're going to talk about some bloom boards, talk about swinging strike percentages, ball percentages, ERAs, who should be not doing as well and who isn't, vice versa, stuff like that. Talk about some recent news because there was a bit of big news on Tuesday to discuss and much, much more. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDintric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're doing great, man. Hell of a Tuesday. Hell of a Tuesday. The for me, the vocal cords are getting a run. I guested on the Fantasy Feud podcast earlier today with Sarah Sanchez and Shelley Verstrait, which was a ton of fun. And then the baseball today, the Trout injury and the associated Twitter takes. We had a brawl between the Brewers and the Rays.
Uribe and Jose Siri. Siri's lucky he had that ear hole on his helmet. That's all I got to say.
A lot of whiffs in that one. We had a Ryan Feltner. I don't know if you saw the Ryan Feltner.
Yeah, your tweet was good, by the way.
Oh, Ryan Feltner with a Maddux heading into the ninth. Up five, did not get the win. That was
brutal. Rockies lost.
Rockies lost. Yeah. They lost 7-6. We had a beehive delay in Arizona. And then we have, I wrote all this down. We have the mascot with a home run, Luis Rengifo with a home run, three hits, and his ninth steal. So, and we just watched together, that's the reason we're a little bit late tonight. We just watched Mason Miller absolutely destroy, strike out the side, Pittsburgh 7-8-9, ending with O'Neal Cruz. So it's been a fun day, man.
Yeah, that was NC-17 in Oakland. Like, that was just filthy. Absolutely filthy what took place there. It's either one, he just throws it by you or makes you look ridiculous with like an 89-mile-an-hour slider. That he has almost like a 13-mile-an-hour difference in his pitches, let alone the way the pitch shape is. Like, good luck. Just good luck hitting. It's crazy.
It was funny. We were talking with Shelley and Sarah earlier today. We were talking about Ellie De La Cruz. And I was like, yeah, I don't have him on any teams, whatever. So from that aspect, it's tough to see him do so well, but it's also just like you're witnessing greatness and just it's just fun as hell to watch. I feel like Mason Miller is like the pitching side of that where I don't have any – he's not on any of my teams or whatever, but it's so fun. We were just sitting here like oohing and aahing after every pitch just now, and that's what makes this stuff fun, man.
Yep, that's what baseball's all about, literally like not a whole lot of fantasy impact for either one of us, but it was just crazy to sit there and watch everything take place. And like, as Michael Cicchini in the chat says, it's crazy, but the A's are more fun to watch than the Giants. And 100%, I've been tweeting about it. We talked about it off air. It's Major League. It's the real life version of the Major League team in Oakland right now. And I'm hoping they make a playoff, like an attempt to make to the playoffs. I don't think they'll get there, but if they just keep winning like this and keep it entertaining in their last year in Oakland, it's going to be so awesome. Like, so awesome. Because there's going to be viewing parties outside of the stadium that'll be massive because they don't want to support the team.
They will not the go owner. In the stadium.
It's going to be it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be good.
There's one guy who will not
go to
a home game, but he's going to every single road game this
year. He's been a ticket holder for years, and he canceled the season tickets this year, and he's going to every road game, traveling to every road game. That's pretty cool, actually, but pretty crazy at the same time.
That's awesome. I don't know what he does for a day job, but that's pretty sweet. I would do it.
I'm jealous for sure. A couple notes before we get started. Alex Stewart says, Bubba, thanks for the Jeffers love in the preseason. Yep, that's been working out pretty, pretty well. Our buddy Mr. Gialdi says, losing that Montgomery start really stings. Pun intended or no pun intended is the question.
Oh, that's good. I didn't catch that one. Well done.
Because for those that weren't paying attention, the D-backs and Dodgers game was delayed for a couple hours due to a beehive, and Jordan Montgomery got scratched because he already warmed up. It's like essentially like a rain delay, and he did not get the start on Tuesday. So that is a bummer.
It was pretty good. I think they had to like wait for a local pest control company to get in the stadium, and then they showed the dude on the video board, the bee guy who, I don't know, did whatever he did, exterminated, removed them, whatever, and everyone gave him a round of applause. So I don't know, man. This sport is just – It's beautiful some days on a random Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's what a response from one of our Twitter followers and a listener to the show, Timothy, who's in some of our leagues. I tweeted something out earlier, like, did I miss anything? And he sent back, he's all, besides one of the strangest Tuesday nights of baseball I've ever seen, not really. And then I started looking at box scores, and I'm like, yeah, that was pretty wild stuff there. So, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. All right, let's get to it. Boom. biggest news of the day for most of the season now, Mike Trout, yet again, heads to the IL. Like, super, super disappointing news, because we started seeing Mike Trout steal bases again, hit home runs, look like the Mike Trout of old, and now he's going to have surgery on a torn meniscus in his knee. It's usually like at least a six-weekish thing, maybe longer, depends. It's an easy procedure now, depending on the severity of the tear, but like it's laparoscopic most of the time. You're in, you're out the same day. It's not season ending. It's just a matter of how much they actually have to repair is what it comes down to. So we're losing Trout for some time.
We are. He's a hold to me over any other hold I think we've talked about so far, especially because it might only be 6 weeks. We'll see. That's kind of the comp that's been thrown out there with other meniscus injuries. The Angels, man, losing Rendon is addition by subtraction, especially when you do have Ringifo starting at third base in his stead. But I don't know. It looks like a Mickey Moniak platoon. They either signed or brought up Kevin Pillar today.
They signed him. Probably he got DFA'd when Pham came to the White Sox.
Okay. I don't know how or why you know that, but
I do news every single day.
But it's good that you do know that. The Mickey Moniak Kevin Pillar platoon is just not doing it for me from a fantasy standpoint. And again, it's just one less body, because Rengifo, and this is a Luis Rengifo podcast, can play everywhere. It's just one less hurdle, I guess, for him with everyday playing time. But yes, would love to see Trout back as soon as possible. He was, I don't know if you saw the video, they interviewed him. Yeah. He was pretty tore up. I mean, it's got to be frustrating for the guy, man.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating for the guy, for baseball fans. I'm not even going to make this a fantasy thing, because Twitter's taking care of the BS on that one. So I'll just keep it simple. I guess it just sucks. We were talking about how we liked just watching Mason Miller because we're baseball fans. I think you can pretty much agree that I'm going to just speak for most people. We like watching Mike Trout play baseball. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest takeaway for me on this one. I'm not going to even say how many shares I have or don't have. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. It's a hold, like you said, and just hopefully he comes back soon. Most importantly, Taylor Ward, Logan Ohapi, Rengifo, the Fighting Angels, they're going to keep giving you fantasy goodness, because less people in the way, like you said. So that's the biggest takeaway for me for now. But we'll wait and see more Trout information, because, yeah, if it's 6 to 8 weeks, you're definitely holding as long as you possibly can. That's the obvious thing. Like, what's the timetable where you say you got to drop them?
2.5, 3 months, something like that.
Okay. So like a Tristan Casas.
Probably. Yeah. Cause that's 3 months from now as a happy May, by the way, my friend. Yep. 3 months from now is August. And that just seems like so far away. So yeah, probably like something like 3 months.
Okay. Yes. Well, and we'll have more news for you guys on Thursday's Fab Show, because, well, he'll hopefully have the procedure and have a clear idea of what is ahead of him going forward. But like I said, I've had the surgery for a meniscus thing. I am not Mike Trout by any means. And I know many others that have, and it's just literally you're in, you're out. It just depends on the severity of the situation. So time will tell. Jordan Beck, we had a slew of prospects get called up the last day or two. So we'll start with Jordan Beck of the Colorado Rockies, one of their top prospects. Nolan Jones hits the IL with his back injury. So Jordan Beck gets the call for the Rockies. He hit .307 in AAA with 5 homers and 5 steals. And got the start on Tuesday night over Hunter Goodman, which is not cool at all. So how are we looking at that? Before we go there, we have another meniscus surgery in here. Papa Bloom here, 2 meniscus surgeries, playing golf 1 month later. But I obviously am not Tristan Trout. Yeah, that's my thing. It's like I was able to be back and doing things within like a month or so. But to be able to play professional, they even told me, we did the basics because you're not a professional athlete. Those are their exact words. We would have done more if we knew you were going to be like doing stuff. Let's put it that way. So, okay. Jordan Beck, prospects. What are we thinking here? Because, you know, both of us are pretty much not on prospect guys is what it comes down to. So I'm kind of a wait and see. I actually picked up some Hunter Goodman shares this past week, so this is not making me feel great about life. But we'll see what Beck has, I guess.
Yeah. I again shameless plug for Baseball HQ, but I always lean on our prospect team that Chris Blessing heads. We do call up reports for every single prospect that gets the call every single day, and it's super helpful. If you are a Baseball HQ subscriber and not taking advantage of that, I suggest you do. We are very high on Jordan Beck. We love the power. We love the fact that he can run a little bit. The problem with Jordan Beck was a 32% strikeout rate in AAA, I believe, last year. Or sorry, AA, 32% last year. Lowered that strikeout rate to 20% so far in AAA this year. So there were some plate skill gains with Jordan Beck that I think are very interesting. And I actually think from a per plate appearance basis, this is my favorite prospect that we will talk about tonight. It's just the plate appearance thing. We don't know. I mean, you just brought up Bubba, the Hunter Goodman example. We don't know if Jordan Beck will play every day, but it is obviously a good sign that he started tonight. Left field,
went two for four.
So, I mean, it's all about playing time and the Rockies not playing games. So, Jordan Beck, I was very impressed by the HQ write-up, and when they do something like that, it catches my attention for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm very intrigued. And I guess the good thing is it's one of those where he gets called up at the beginning of the week, so we get to see these prospects all week, see how the teams utilize them, get a better feel for the situation. Like, imagine if Heston Kjerstad was called up on Saturday, played the one game, and then imagine how much fab money would have been spent then. There's already a lot spent this last week I thought was kind of like suspect. Just imagine if it was like a one-day situation and then he sits after that. That's when it really, like, I'm mad about Hunter Goodman stuff, but I spent like $13.
Right.
So I can live with that in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. And even like a Sean Bouchard is playing relative, but you're not spending much there. So we'll see. I don't know. Did you say, or did we know how long Nolan Jones is? I mean, with back issues,
they have not given an update. It's been lingering with them for a while. Like, he's missed games here and there. I expect this to be, I'd say 2 to 4 weeks if I had to be nice, but I'd probably lean closer to the 4 weeks situation. I think they want him to be fully healed before they keep this. Do you want a Chris Bryant situation is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And that's the question.
Like, you have to think that the back issue was driving Nolan Jones is just straight up awful start. Probably, maybe not the sole reason, but certainly did not help. And if you rush that back, it's no bueno. But again, who knows what the Rockies are thinking.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Tyler Black got called up by the Milwaukee Brewers in the preseason. I know we've even talked about on this show that a lot of us thought Tyler Black would start the season as like the third baseman for the Brewers. It did not happen. A lot of things, moving parts and injuries took place in Milwaukee. But Black got the call. He's hitting .303, 5 homers, 3 steals in 25 games at AAA this season. Put up some power, lots of speed last year in the minors. The early reports out of Milwaukee is he's going to play primarily first base and DH, which I thought was interesting. So it still leaves a bit of a platoon role because Rhys Hoskins is going to play pretty much every day. He's been playing first base or DH too. So what's your thoughts on this Tyler Black when he did not play on Tuesday night? Or did not start?
Did not play Tuesday night. And I don't know if that was it was the day he got called up and wasn't ready, or if it's an actual platoon thing because it was against a lefty tonight and Tyler Black did not play. Even if it was just they called him up, I don't know. I don't know how often Tyler Black plays. We saw what Milwaukee did with Oliver Dunn, who started playing against right-handed pitching and then just disappeared. I'm not going to say that's going to happen with Black, but I think best case, this is a strong side platoon. We'll talk Thursday on the Thursday show what Milwaukee's schedule looks like for next week. Tyler Black is like not your typical third baseman. The reason we were both talking about him back in draft and hold season was the, 55 steals between AA and AAA with a good strikeout rate and like a .300 average. So this is a guy who's not just a one trick pony. And there's even some power. Like, he had 18 home runs last year, 14 of which at AA. So like, skills are there. It's just, is he going to play? Is he going to play enough? So again, we have a few days to see what that playing time situation shakes out as. So we'll adjust accordingly. But he's exciting. He's exciting. Yep.
Very, very exciting, especially that corner infield speed you mentioned. That's a very, very tough to find. The next prospect, Joey Loperfido of the, I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's what I've been hearing everywhere. Houston Astros. Bloomfield's grimacing, so we got a 4-star review coming up.
Yeah, we just got a 2-star review for that one, man.
Yep. Yep, Lo Profito, and he got the start. He went 1 for 5 with 2 RBIs on Tuesday night. In AAA, was hitting .287, 13 homers, 5 steals. So a lot of power speed. He's been kind of hyped up for a few weeks. I think you talked about just losing out to him in either Tout or Labor recently from Dr. Roto. But the reports here is Jose Abreu is getting the Alec Manoa treatment, is what I want to call it. He's going to get he's going to the rookie league, the rookie camp in Florida.
The penal league or something. Yeah. I saw that tweet. I was like, he's been optioned to the – and like it wasn't like a level.
Nah. He's in like the Florida Gator Gulf Coast Key West League. And you got Lo Profito was in the lineup today. John Singleton went deep, was in the lineup today. But the early reports are the Astros want to play Lo Profito as much as possible and mainly in the outfield, they said. So that's the early reports. What's your thoughts on him?
It is pretty interesting to compare the HQ write-up on Beck versus Lo Profito. Much higher on Beck. Better numbers for Lo Profito. Like the power looks really good. It is Pacific Coast League. So you do have to take PCL numbers with a metric ton of salt, not just a grain. 30% strikeout rate in AAA for Lo Profito as well. So like there's power speed, but I worry about the Ks. That said, I do think his playing time, at least in the short term, Lo Profito's playing time is safer than Beck's. We'll see.
Feels like.
Just because, yeah, you don't get demoted to the penal league and come back in a week. So we'll see. Like you said, Lo Profito played left tonight, but can move around. Chaz McCormick's been hurt a little bit. So I think Lo Profito with a big week this week is going to be very expensive in Fab and probably too expensive for me, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I think there's so much hype behind Lo Profito right now that it's probably already a no for me is what it's going to come down to on that one, but we'll wait and see. It is first base, and I do need some corner infield help in a few leagues, so that might change things. On that situation, but we'll see. It'll be fun to see between Beck, Black, and Lo Profito how things go this week, and maybe we get the Toronto prospect,
Aurelvis Martinez.
Maybe we get him pretty soon. We got Caminero in Tampa Bay, who's chomping at the door. Manzardo has hit a bunch of home runs of late. Like, there's a lot of, but the Guardians don't really need help. That's the problem. Like, they're unlike these other teams. Guardians are structured at the moment. So more prospects to come is my point. So don't blow it all right now if you really don't like them. That's the goal of this situation.
Yep.
All right, Mad Max Scherzer. This is a bummer because he had a rehab start. Things were good. And then he was scheduled to throw another rehab start this week. And now that has been put on hold as Max is dealing with a thumb soreness situation. And he's going to be shut down until said thumb soreness comes back. So I just wanted to bring it up. Not sure if there's really a whole lot else to say about this, but we were supposed to get Scherzer back maybe as early as next week. That's going to be a few weeks away now.
Yep. Yeah, I don't really have anything to add there. You just kind of you wait until he comes back. But yeah, it would have been awful nice to have that. It's like one of the best feelings in fantasy when you have been stashing somebody and you get to put him back in. It's like, maybe that's just me. Maybe it's not that exciting.
It's exciting.
I almost had that feeling today with Vaughn Grissom and stashing him all year and then was going to get activated with Boston and then has the flu. So yep. I had to womp, put him back on my bench. So I'll get that feeling Friday, maybe.
Hopefully the Montezuma's revenge or whatever he's got going on there disappears.
Did we get any? I see your news run down here. We did not get any Rocky scratch due to illness.
Not that I've seen it, I would just call it the Miami flu now if they missed a game because you get an off day from Mexico to Miami. God knows what they were doing in South Beach to make that take place.
I was waiting for the old scratch with illness today, but
That would have been good. Like when Jordan Beck gets called up because someone has the flu, would have been real good on that one.
Yeah.
Little update on Zach Geloff. He was put on the IL over the weekend with an oblique injury. The A's officially announced he shut down from all baseball activities, which makes sense for the oblique situation, but no timetable for Geloff. And the fact he shut down means it's pretty severe, in my opinion. We'll have to wait and see. Well, that's like, say a Suzuki was shut down. Like these guys with big oblique injuries, you get shut down and you kind of work back slowly to see what you can do. So just kind of keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, it might be voiding our preseason bet on Geloff, which was, I think, finishing a top 15 second baseman.
Yeah.
But probably won't get the plate appearances to get there. So you dodged a bullet there because you were wrong on that one.
You dodged a bullet because Geloff was raking and you know it. So yeah, sip your water. Some positive notes here. Justin Steele is expected to make a rehab start here this week and return to the Cubs rotation next week. So get ready to put him in your lineups barring any setbacks.
Oh, I will. I've got a team with Strider, Steele, and Merrill Kelly as my first three starters. So that's been fun.
Yeah, that is looking forward to getting at least one of those back. That's for sure.
Who do you think? So Tyon's in, Assad's in, obviously him and
Ben Brown.
You think it's Ben Brown who's out?
Yeah, that's
not Wisniewski.
It could be Wisniewski now you mention it, because he kind of got the last spot start. Ben Brown was kind of in the same boat as Wisniewski.
Yeah.
He went to the bullpen and he came back. I bet you they're fishing for it. Like whoever pitches better keeps the role type situation. So
Ben Brown's going a little bit deeper. I think Wisniewski's only been going like three innings per.
Yeah, he's not as fully stretched out.
Right. I'm pulling for Ben Brown. I think if Ben Brown can stick in that rotation, not a stud or anything, but someone in this environment that at least is usable in 15 teamers.
He has a pulse, and he's pitching every fifth day. It's all that matters right now.
Yep.
Josh Lowe was in the clubhouse set to rejoin the Rays over the weekend and somehow had a setback due to a new hamstring injury. He's having MRIs, and he's day-to-day. They're going to take it day-to-day, as they said. So that's frustrating, as I'll get up. Lastly, Tristan Casas. This is what I wanted to ask you here. It got placed on the 60-day IL. If you've been following the injury news on Tristan Casas, it's bizarro world. Like, they literally said his swing did not fracture a rib after all. It tore cartilage, and it had the effect of a car crash. Like, that is insane to think about that kind of – like, as golf people, that's like Tiger Woods swing to me. That's what's going on there in that situation. So Casas officially was placed on the 60-day IL, which means he can't come back till at least June 21st, at least. As barring no setbacks, we might head to August, as you just said with Mike Trout. Is Casas a drop for you?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yep.
How interested are you in Garrett Cooper?
Not very. Unless he starts playing more, I think it's going to be a straight platoon between he and Bobby Dalbec. So I just want to see whoever.
How do you platoon two right-handed bats?
Is Dalbec righty?
Oh,
uh-huh. He's lefty. Yeah. Oh, never mind.
Both righties.
I mean, they've been switching off between the two, so I don't know. I don't think there's enough playing time with either one. I was hoping they would sign like CJ Crone or somebody.
Brandon Belt.
Brandon Belt
is somehow still just out in the spaces of the world. Like Brandon Crawford got a job before Brandon Belt. It just blows my mind, that whole situation. But I have a feeling the way things are going these days, we'll see Brandon Belt in no time because everyone's going down with an injury. So
yeah. And Cooper left.
Yeah, hit on the hand by a pitch and he had to leave the game on Tuesday. So his time with the Red Sox might be short lived as well. It's carnage. The Red Sox are cursed, honestly. Like, it's bad. Bad over there. But they are supposed to get Pivetta back and Bayo back real soon. So
I was going to say, reinforcements are coming, and they are holding it together.
Yeah, they're still playing good ball. So they're surviving. Definitely are in play in the NL East, or AL East. All right, Bloomfield, it's Bloom Board time. Explain what we got going here. I'll get rid of the banner here for you while you set things up.
All right. Bloom Board time. Here we go. So for the live stream YouTube crowd, we got two rows of data here. Basically, what we're looking at here is since we're still in small sample mode, it's only a month. It's maybe five, six starts for a lot of these starting pitchers. I like to use the per pitch metrics, and the two ones that we talk about all the time on the show are swinging strike rate and ball rate. Swinging strike rate is a very good proxy for strikeout rate, right? Your ability to miss bats, your league average on that is like 11, 12%. Ball rate is a very good proxy for control. So your walk rate and your league average on that is 36%. So what I figured I would do for this week's Bloom Board is take the pitchers that are better than average in both and just see who has the worst ERAs among them. So We see Andrew Heaney at the top. And then on the flip side, on the right side of our screen with the red, is pitchers who have the best ERAs, but worse than average swinging strike and ball rates, if that makes sense. So just looking at the ability to miss bats and throw strikes, again, there's a lot more to, and that's why, I mean, that's the purpose of the show tonight, is to paint some context onto this. It's not just two numbers that you judge pitchers by, but it's two numbers that I really look at and trust, especially in smaller samples, to see like just how effective on a per pitch basis a lot of these pitchers are. And it is wild to see, just especially after six starts, how much ERA can vary between a lot of these guys. So that's what we're looking at tonight. We did get I know we do listener questions at the end, but this is just relevant. Michael Sacchini asked where I get ball rate, and I don't know why, but it's like not available anywhere.
Yeah, you think it would be by now.
You would think it would be like we use it in the forecast, but we translate it into like an expected walk rate, so it's a little bit easier to digest. Fangraphs has in their stat download or whatever has the number of balls and the number of pitches, so I just divide that and get the number. But I would like to see, just personally, I know Toby uses ball rate all the time. Rob DiPietro uses it all the time. It's a very good stat. I would like to see it more widely used. And it's just intuitive, right?
Yep, it is.
Don't want to throw balls. It leads to walks.
Maybe you have a connection at a website that can incorporate that onto the player pages.
I might. We'll see what I can do there.
Just gonna throw that out there right now. But let's have some fun here. I think we're going to talk probably pretty evenly on both sides. But there's some very intriguing names on the left side, the high ERA but very good strikes and ball percentage guys here. I'm going to start with Garrett Crochet right out the gate here. 5.97 ERA but a 14.1% swinging strike, 34.5% ball rate. Like when you look at the underlying stats, like a Sierra's 2.66, xERAs, xFIPs, you name it, everything indicates much, much more. I actually watched his start on Monday night against the Twins, a very good Twins offense. And outside of the two run homer to Santana, he looked really, really good. Like he was kind of locked in there. So I'm still optimistic on Crochet. Again, we're going to have the innings limit at some point in time, so there could be some wear and tear stuff with Crochet, but he's pitching much better than this ERA indicates, in my opinion. What's your thoughts on Crochet?
He has, and it's been complete up or down. The first three starts for Crochet, a combined four earned runs, and then gave up 5.75 in a pretty nasty three-start stretch, starting April 13th, ending on the 24th. And then, Bubba, the start that you watched looked great again. And even, I was seeing, I don't have Crochet anywhere, but just a lot of folks on Twitter, a couple of those starts just got, like, really squeezed. And those starts could have been much friendlier than they actually were. So the biggest problem for me with Garrett Crochet is how long is he going to throw? This is a guy who is coming off Tommy John surgery in 2022, was a reliever, only threw 54 innings in 2021. I don't think he was in the majors in 2019. So there's like no workload history here. For a guy, again, coming off Tommy John, but not only coming off Tommy John, but coming off Tommy John as a reliever and now to come in as a starter. He's already thrown 34 innings. And so, like, you can be very high in Garrett Crochet, but you have to know the clock is ticking. And that's the problem with, like, yes, the results have been bad, but the skills are good. Well, there's a decent chance we've already seen, like, a third of his season. And so... yes, you want to wait for the quote unquote luck factors to turn around, but I don't think there's that much time with Garrett Crochet, and the White Sox have zero reason to push Garrett Crochet even further.
Yeah, I'm going to keep using him until things change in the usage pattern. Yes, but yes. Yeah, I locked him into my lineup again this past week, and he's just one of those guys where I know the good times are coming. And as Michael says in the chat here, Crochet's eighth in K to walk. He's been quite unlucky, yep. So he's got the goods. It's just a couple things here and there, and things can change. Just for fun, let's talk Ryan Feltner.
Oh, come on, dude.
5.68 ERA, 13.3% swinging strike, 33.5% ball. You already mentioned he had the Maddox going into the ninth, then all heck broke loose like the Rockies can do. Bented, friend of the show. He's been big on the whole Feltner train this year. You were big on the Feltner train last year. Feltner was a popular stream this week. And for reasons of what we're seeing here, if you dig deeper into other metrics, he's actually been pretty good. But mm-hmm. what's your thoughts on this whole Feltner thing?
Yeah, Feltner lowered his ERA from 5.68, which is what we have on the sheet here. Lowered it to like 4.20 or something with 8 1/3 and or 8 innings and 2 earned tonight. What a freaking brutal, just brutal ending to that stream. I was so happy because I have been Feltnered multiple times in multiple years, and I put my trust back in Feltner, and he looked great, but. Yeah, just did not end that well. In all seriousness, like Feltner, he's on this list for a reason. He does get a ton of whiffs. He throws strikes. I'm never starting him in Colorado.
No.
But like this week was the stream. I don't know who their second. It's a very soft second.
Top of my head, I'm thinking Pirates. I'm going to pull up.
I think you're right. I think it was at Marlins at White Sox. So like Feltner is a very good stream. And I think no matter, well, not no matter, against most opponents on the road, Ryan Feltner is, I think, a usable piece because he does get a ton of whiffs and throw those strikes. But I would not use him at Coors.
Yeah, at Pittsburgh this weekend. So
yeah. That's good. A go.
Yeah. And then next week he's at home against Texas. You could drop him this Sunday if you'd like. That's kind of the way.
I probably am. Depending, but yes, you're not starting him at home.
All right. Well, your boy Jack Flaherty was amazing on Tuesday. There's revenge games, and then there's Jack Flaherty revenge games. 6 2/3 shutout, 2 hit innings with 14 strikeouts. Versus the Cardinals. He has 50 strikeouts and 36 innings pitched after today. That's nuts. But going into today is what the numbers here show. 4.91 ERA with that 15.2% swinging strike and your 34% ball rate was in full effect on Tuesday. And it's only been like one or two hiccup starts. Overall, he's actually been kind of serviceable every time out there, which makes sense based on what we're seeing. So what's your thoughts on Captain Jack Flaherty?
Just if I had better video production capabilities, I think I'd run back that preseason episode. Yes. where I mentioned Mr. Flaherty, and the chat just went nuclear on me, as did you.
Yes, I'm guilty. But then you swayed me, remember, because I drafted in like my last two drafts. Like you swayed me.
You probably have him in tout, same league against me, because I don't probably. Have him in tout. But yeah, I mean, Flaherty's
he was traded in a weird trade this last week.
He was.
Yeah, Scott White got him. Okay. Scott White got him.
Congrats, Scott. But yes, Flaherty is on this list before tonight's or today Tuesday's gem. And yeah, like I wasn't expecting this, and it still won't be this great, even though the ERA is bad. But like Flaherty has this, it's been the slider that he's throwing a ton more, 35% usage. He threw it just 25% of the time last year. Getting a 20% swing strike on it, and he's throwing it for strikes. 32% ball rate on his slider. So the slider has been a godsend for Flaherty. The four-seam fastball velocity is up half of a tick, and he's throwing a curveball that misses a ton of bats too. It's actually his best swing and miss pitch. So like Flaherty has a good fastball that he throws for strikes and gets whiffs, and two secondaries with a 20% swinging strike each. Like that is a formula for a lot of success. And then you tack on the contextual factors, like probably not getting a bunch of run support with Detroit, but that's a damn good park to pitch in. So I would say buy low on Jack Flaherty, but today happened, so probably can't.
Yeah, probably can't. So that's a bummer. But what is not a bummer is Brendan Faught, who I think we went from your guy. We're going to go to one of my guys now.
Go to your guy. Yeah, even 4-6-3. Though you can't spell his name, he's still your guy.
Fought, 4.63 ERA, 12.1% swinging strike, 32.5% ball rate. He had 11 strikeouts in his last start against the Seattle Mariners. Just looking at game logs, it's fun to see. Like the home run issues are still there. Two games without a home run, though, that's a positive in my mind. More importantly, 3 out of the 6 games, 0 walks. That's something that we talked about plagued him as well. So that's an improvement. Not to mention the swinging strike rates we're talking about here. So what are you seeing when you look at Brendan Faught? Because to me, this is the guy I kind of expected him to be. Like there'll be hiccups, but as a whole, I think he's a very good pitcher.
And it's key. You say the improvement in walks, and that's why I want to drive home why I'm using ball rate. Because okay, we have an improvement in walks from Brendan Faught. is he throwing strikes to kind of back that up? Like, does that improvement in walk rate make sense? And a 32.5% ball rate for Brandon Pfaadt. Again, your league average on that is 36%. 32.5 is really good. So throwing a ton of strikes and doing it with his top three pitches, a sinker, four seam, and a sweeper. To throw a sweeper for strikes 70% of the time is freaking crazy. And he's throwing a little bit more than he has last year, and fought sweeper as a 23% swinging strike. It's just a knockout pitch. So, and you're right, the homer issues like have kind of subsided lately. 13% homer to fly ball on the year, which is actually still even worse than league average. What we're seeing so far in MLB with maybe some changes in the ball. The league average homer to fly is like 10-11%. So Pfaadt, I would argue, has still been maybe unfairly hit by the home run ball. I don't think he's necessarily homer prone. I think it's too early in his career to say that. So I think things are very much looking up for your guy here.
Yeah, curious to see where he goes this week. Does he stay starting tomorrow? Does Montgomery start tomorrow? Does it move things around? Because that's very much the year. They have an off day Thursday. They just give Pfaadt an extra day, like a week off. I don't know, but lots of questions there. Bailey Ober, this is a fun one because I've actually written a lot about him lately for some reason. He's the cover boy for Wednesday's daily matchups, actually. So you got that coming your way. But Bailey Ober, 4.21 ERA, 11.2% swinging strike, 33% ball rate. And if like it's one of those where Ryan will come out with his Bloom board at some point that says like if you subtract one start, his first start was horrific. Got destroyed against the Kansas City Royals. Just didn't have anything. Was hit all over the ballpark. You take that one start out. He's made four starts, four earned runs over 24 in the third innings with 24 strikeouts. That makes everything look so much better. Probably wouldn't even be on the list if we're talking about it. So I love Bailey Ober. He's doing what we thought he could do. What else you got on the big righty from Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, one earned run per start the last four after that eight. And I do think it is fair. And I mean, the start did happen. It hurt, but like...
Oh, I think it's very fair when you look at the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. So I don't have much to add. Bailey Ober looks awesome. The only reason why the ERA is inflated is because of those eight earned runs and one and a third. He would not be on this list if it were not for that start. And like the whiffs are a little bit low, like an 11% swinging strike. I'd like to see that a little bit higher, but the control is absolutely there for Bailey Ober. The homers have been down. A Sierra, which is one of our favorite ERA estimators that's available on Fangraphs, is already going down in the threes. And again, that incorporates Bailey Ober's first start. So zero qualms with Bailey Ober and where he's going to go from here. I think he's going to be great.
Another one of your guys here, George Kirby, 4.18 ERA, 11.7% swinging strike, 28.4% ball rate. And he had a couple rough starts early, like really, really rough starts early.
Yeah.
The last three starts have been great. And more importantly to me, and this was my conundrum when we talked about pre-draft stuff, I was worried about strikeouts with George Kirby. And that has come to fruition the last three starts. He's combined for 25 strikeouts over the last 18 innings pitched with only two earned runs over those 18 innings. So that's pretty big boy stuff, not to mention your boy still isn't walking anybody. So what's your thoughts on George Kirby?
Yeah, 3% walk rate. That is pretty amazing. Probably, well, I don't know. Maybe if Nick Pollock is lurking in the chat, I would argue George Kirby's four-seam fastball is the best in the game right now. He just misses so many bats with it, and he throws it for strikes 75%. That's why the control is just immaculate, is because he can basically do what he wants, live at the top of the zone with that four seamer, and Kirby just knocks it out. So the thing with Kirby, I don't think he's out of, yes, the strikeout rate is up. It's up 5 points. It's up considerably from 2023. I don't think he's out of the woods from a strikeout perspective yet. We were all banking on that, like, or at least I was talking all draft season about the in season use of his split finger to kind of get that out pitch. Hasn't really come to fruition this year. He's only throwing, Kirby is, the split finger 10% of the time. So the one qualm that I have with Kirby is it's all the fastball right now. That could change. We're seeing that with Bryce Miller and what he's doing in Seattle's rotation with the split finger. But that, I mean, again, nitpicking, this is the George Kirby that I think most people drafted in the third round. And despite a couple early hiccups, looks fantastic.
We'll stick in Seattle real quick. Luis Castillo put together a gem on Tuesday night. Coming into Tuesday, though, 4.15 ERA, 12.5% swinging strike, 32.4% ball rate. He's another one of those guys similar to Kirby. Early start to the season, not great. Last three starts, though, really good. 27 strikeouts over 19 innings pitched, only three walks over that stretch, four earned runs over those three games, a lot more like the Castillo we've come to expect. Anything you see with Castillo, kind of like the way you saw with Kirby.
He's all good, man. Dominated the Braves tonight. Seven innings, seven Ks, three hits, no earned, one walk. I gave you this stat before the podcast began tonight. But the Seattle Mariners, man, 18 yeah. straight starts giving up two earned or less. That is absolutely bonkers. And they're only 17-13. I feel like they need to be a lot better, Julio, but that starting rotation is just like, I mean, we fawned over pretty much all of them. I guess Brian Wu is coming back, but fawned over all of them over draft season. They all look just amazing. Like almost led by Bryce Miller at this point. He looks really good.
He looks filthy, absolutely filthy. So yeah, at least that rotation is living up to the hype from the preseason, which is pretty cool to see. Cole Reagans is a fun one here because he's got the 3.9 ERA. Almost 15% swinging strike rate, 34.5% ball rate. Threw great on Tuesday, 6 2/3, one earned, nine Ks in that one. He's had like that 1-7-run outing against Baltimore. Other than that, being pretty serviceable, all things considered. So what's your thoughts on Cole Reagans here? Because all in all, he's probably like the ratio's maybe a bit higher than people want, but overall has been pretty good.
I've been impressed with the improvements in control. I think I called him what, five walk Reagans last year a bunch of times because I think in one game he walked five guys, so probably a little bit too harsh, but in every start this season, so it's been 3-2-1-1-0-3 walks for Cole Reagans. And again, not to sound like a broken record, but if I see that improvement in walk rate, I go right to ball rate, and has that improved as well? And it has, going down to 34.5%. I think that was up above 36% last year for Cole Reagans. So the improvement in walk rate is bolstered by the fact that he's throwing more strikes, and he's throwing more strikes and still missing a ton of bats with that swing strike up near 15%. So it's looking pretty rosy for Cole Reagans, someone who I have no shares of, but certainly root for him. He looks really damn good.
I want to ask you about Hunter Green here. 3.63 ERA, 12% swinging strike, 35.4% ball rate. He's looked great in his two road starts, which we've said all along was something yeah. Hunter Green can do. And he's like 50-50 in the home starts, kind of what we said all along Hunter Green could do. So when you're looking at this list here, when it comes to Hunter Green, are you like excited about the improvements, or are you still thinking this is a ticking time bomb?
I'm still in ticking time bomb mode. I just think like I've said the stat on the podcast before, there's only three pitchers, I believe, in the last 10 years, which is probably also major league history, that average above 98 miles an hour at the fastball and have thrown 100 innings in a season. Hunter Green's one of them, and he's done it twice, but he's never gone over 130. And so I just worry, you tack on the park. Bubba, you mentioned the home road splits there. Like, of anyone on this left side of this bloom board here with the favorable swinging strike and ball rates, Hunter Green is non-Andrew Heaney division, probably the one that I'm least excited about, just with the injury risk and how hard he throws and how like you are really holding your breath in half of his starts because they're at home.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. If you're ready, let's go to the dark side of the board here.
I'm always ready.
Yeah, and I'm going to go straight to Christian Javier because there are a lot of names that stand out here, but this one stands out to me because, like you said, with Hunter Green kind of being the one you don't really trust the most out of the green side of the board, right out the gate, Christian Javier, I've had trouble buying into this entire season. 1.54 ERA, 9.8% swinging strike, 39.3% ball rate. Like you break down his games, and he's not giving up. He's given four run runs all year, but the walks have been a plenty. Not getting a lot of strikeouts, which goes with what's going on in the columns there. Are you seeing anything that leaves you optimistic with Javier? Because if you start looking at those ERA indicators, that 1.54 is really lucky, all things considered.
Yeah, it's next to a 5.30 Sierra, which is, again, skills independent ERA. It's what the ERA should be based on the skills. And so, like, what's driving the Christian Javier 154 ERA? It's what I call the trifecta of good luck. It's a crazy low batting average on balls in play, 215 BABIP. League average on that's like 300. Left on base rate of 85%. So anyone who gets on base isn't scoring. League average on that's like in the low 70s. And a 3% homer to fly ball rate. Like, he's not allowing home runs. And I say that as like a good thing, but that's not going to hold up for very long. So, like, yeah, Christian Javier is this is the kind of the problem with playing fantasy baseball in 2024. You would say sell high, but like everyone I think sees this stuff. But just to dig that one level deeper and look at the whiffs and the ability, the inability really for Christian Javier to throw strikes. And it's really ugly. And like Javier has been the one kind of shining star of the Houston staff.
Yep.
But I think that's going to dim very quickly.
Yeah. Michael Cicchini says, did the Astros lose a pitching guru? But a rough. Yeah. It's been rough. It's been real rough. Hunter Brown. My goodness. That's been, again, on Tuesday. Not good. It's just been.
He got lit up again on Tuesday. Yeah. So
eventually you got to be like, just send him to AAA and get fit. Kind of like the D-backs do with Brendan Fonda last year. Just send him back down. Like, figure things out. Because, yeah, it's interesting. All right, Jordan Hicks, let's do it.
Guys. Yeah, let's do it.
And I kind of see both sides. Like, I'm still optimistic on Hicks for many reasons, but I get where this board's coming from. 1.59 ERA, 10.2% swinging strike, 37.4% ball rate. Like, the dude, no walks, 9 Ks, and his last start looked great. Start before that, 4 walks, 0 Ks. He's had walk issues from time to time. Strikeouts, like, not dominating, like, 5, maybe a little less than a strikeout per inning when it comes, like, on the season's really low, but that's because of that 0 K game. All things considered, for me though, the thing with Hicks that stands out is that ground ball rate's elite. Like, it's like really, maybe not elite, but really, really good. That's going to be his saving grace more often than not. Where like a Christian Javier, I don't care about what he's doing. He's going to get shelled here pretty soon. Where at least Hicks, as long as he doesn't walk too many guys, the ground balls are going to keep him in a lot of games, in my opinion. What do you say on Jordan Hicks?
No, that's something that this board misses. Is when you have a legitimately elite skill to keep the ball on the ground. And I've talked about the exponential benefits of a ground ball rate above 50%. Hicks being right near 60% is just absurd. And it's not even that. It's what your team is. I mean, you've mentioned this by adding Nick Ahmed and Matt Chapman.
You even thought, like, you want to talk getting clips when I mentioned that earlier in the season, and you looked at me like, what? I'm like, they're building for their pitching staff.
Yep. And they're doing it with basically all their starters, especially once Cobb comes back. But
and Estrada's got more like wins above defense, like whatever replacement numbers, like than most
at second base.
Would shock people to look at Estrada.
Yeah. So like that's something that these numbers are going to miss. And so I do think so. Obviously, Jordan Hicks isn't going to hold a 159 ERA. Would you take the over under on 350 the rest of the way?
I think he's more like a 3-3 just because he'll between that ballpark. They're not going to let him go deep into games to get like lots of trouble. It's just, I think he'll be able to keep it together. Let's put it that way. Like, he's going to be like a quality start guy. Quality starts 4-5, but I think it'd be more like a 3-3 when all things are said and done. The biggest thing with Hicks, it's almost like the crochet thing. How many innings do you get from Jordan Hicks?
Yep.
Like, that's the question mark all along. So it's almost like we talked about Hicks, just kind of you write it out, but wait for it to end. Same with Jordan Hicks. Like, it's one of those. And it makes me wonder if they kind of tell him, hey, you got 40 innings left, and we start seeing the strikeouts come up, he starts gassing up again. That scares me also for many reasons. We don't want to jinx that into orbit, but because he's lost velocity. We talked about he was on another board earlier about that.
Which is in his case a good thing. A 5 mile an hour dip in fastball velocity like sounds awful, but that's good. That's also by design. So
yeah.
I don't know. What's if we're doing over unders? What about innings pitched? Total.
I think he's Jordan about Hicks. 135, 140 would be my guess.
Okay.
I think they're just going to run with it. They gave him the money. It's like, we've seen guys make the jumps. It might scare me off of him for next year. I'll say that much. But
yeah,
if the Giants are contending, they're going to keep throwing him. That's the way I see it working. So,
all right.
Because it's the problem they have. Like, got Keaton Wynn. He's a rookie. He's pitching great. You can go down that rotation. It's they need Alex Cobb and Robbie Ray, weirdly enough, to come back sometime this year.
They're going to need some arms.
Yeah, So we'll see how that goes. Carlos Rodon is a really fun one for me here, because like I pitched him in DFS the other night. He pitched really well because like I can see things that are going well. It's also, I know Carlos Rodon. I've always been kind of negative on Carlos Rodon. And I see numbers like this, and it's like, well, kind of supports your negativity at times too. 2.48 ERA, a 9.9% swinging strike. He's not the dominating guy he once was, and that kind of keeps me off of Rodon. 37.5% ball rate. Like you look at his starts, 8 Ks, 4 Ks, 5 Ks, 6, 3, 4. So 5 or fewer Ks and 4 or 6 starts, that's not Carlos Rodon that we came to like for fantasy. What are you seeing when you see him? Because he's getting the job done for now, but I'm like, I'm not Christian Javier worried, but I'm worried with Carlos Rodon.
I'm 2023 Carlos Rodon worried about 2024 Carlos Rodon, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Dude has the exact same strikeout rate and walk rate that he had last year.
That's
exact
crazy.
Same. Last year he had a 6.85 ERA. This year Rodon is a 2.48 ERA. This is like wow. Exhibit A of how these luck factors can change. Like last year, Carlos Rodon gave up a ton of home runs. This year he's not. Homer to fly ball rate went from 15% last year down to 7% this year. Basically, anybody that Carlos Rodon lets on base is not scoring. It's an 87% left on base rate, where last year it was 60%. It was turnstiles. It's just, again, this is like the Sierra is almost identical, which is all to say Carlos Rodon wasn't as bad as he was last year at a 6.85 ERA, but he's nowhere near as good as a 2.50. I think he's like a 4.50 ERA guy. I just don't see with mediocre strikeout and walk rates like this, and the underlying indicators of a 10% whiff rate and a 38% ball rate, like it's, and the injuries, like how much more are we getting if Carlos Rodon? Yep. I'm worried, man.
Yeah, no, I was off of him early on. Like I said, he's perfect for DFS. Find the right matchups, roll the dice because he's cheap. But I'm not I'm not Javier worried, but I'm worried when it comes to Carlos Rodon, for sure.
Why do you think he's cheap in DFS? Like, are they not catching up to, like, is it the perception of Carlos Rodon, or is it these underlying?
It's the strikeouts. To me, it's the strikeouts and slash the matchup, because strikeouts is what I strive for in DFS. I think that's kind of how the algorithm works a little bit. They also do it off of money lines and gambling and stuff like that. It's how they set their prices. Yankees haven't been, like, overly favorited in a lot of games, so it's kind of a combination of things there. Like Freddy Peralta was very expensive today. Like that's just because you know he's going to strike dudes out and has a good chance to win. Stuff along those lines. So, yeah. Like yesterday, Bailey Falter was $6,000. He was cheap. Got blown up. So there you go.
He did.
Eric Fede was mid-priced yesterday and was very good. And this is a fun one here because I was kind of oblivious to him because the start of the year was not great. Right now he has a 2.6 ERA, 8.8% swinging strike rate, which is not ideal. And a 39% ball rate, which, again, not ideal. Those first three starts, it was like he only gave up 7 runs, but it kind of was kind of smoke and mirror. He went to 5 innings twice. But the last 2 starts, at least, he's gone at least 6 innings, 2 earned runs or less, and 20 combined strikeouts in 14 or 30 innings. Like a whole different pitcher the last 2 starts. So I don't know what Eric Fede is out there these days, but those last 2 starts were awesome. First 3 starts, I'm like, yeah, he's just like not even streamable at times. So what do you see when you see Eric Fede?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I have no idea what to do.
Yeah, it's all over the board. It's all over the board.
So, like, you can look at these season-long numbers and say, oh, yeah, 2.60 ERA. And, you know, he's not a 2.60 ERA guy. We all know that. But you could look at these season-long numbers and be like, oh, he's going to suck. But 20 strikeouts and no walks over his last 2 outings. Like, yes, that's a tiny, tiny ass sample, but like, I think that's something you need to at least look at. I don't see a major change in pitch mix over his last 2 outings. I'm looking at Eric Fetty's pitch usage chart right now on Baseball Savant, and I don't see anything wild there. I have not looked or really have delved into the pitch movement, I guess, to see if there's anything there either yet. But yeah, someone who I honestly, I know people don't want us to throw up our hands, but I'm not going to sit here and make up something that I don't really know. Like I have no idea what to do with Fetty for someone who looked so bad to start and looked unhittable his last two starts. Like, I don't know how that happens.
He dominated the Rays, which Rays are kind of a dwindling offense, but he went into Minnesota, one of the better offenses in baseball of late, and dominated. So it's very confusing to how that one's going down. And I wouldn't overly invest. Some people did this past week, but I'm curious. Like, it's one of those I'd like to wait and see. I'll probably wait too long, but I'm going to wait and see more with Fede than anything.
Same.
All right, I'm going to let you roast me if you want, but Brady Singer is on the board. He has a 2.62 ERA, 10.9% swinging strike, 37% ball rate. He's allowed two earned runs or less in 5 of 6 starts, but he also has 3 straight starts with 3 walks. He struck out 10 in his debut. Other than that, it's been 5 or less in 4 out of 5. Not a big strikeout guy. So the K to walk, not ideal, but he's getting the job done for now. What do you have? Roast me, Bloomfield.
No, you're just like all happy over there.
Well, because I'm waiting for you to tell me.
What was our bet? What was our bet? Was he a bet? No, I just.
You just like to make fun of me every time I mentioned it.
I just destroyed. We should have done a, because Singer was one of your end game start. We should have done a Jack Flaherty versus Brady Singer. Oh, but yeah, I proposed that to you, but you ended up being on Flaherty. So
yeah, once he talked to me about him and I started looking at him more, like Flaherty stood out a lot. I was with you there.
Yeah. So I can't sit here and say what I just said about Jordan Hicks and not say the same thing for Brady Singer. It is an elite ground ball rate.
Yep.
It's a ground ball rate that has been at 50% and now is upwards of that magic number, 60%. And he gets ground balls with a slider, a sinker. Every single pitch gets a ton of ground balls. So Brady Singer is somebody, as much as I hate to say it, who can outpitch what you might see as a pedestrian strikeout minus walk rate. You happy yet, or should I keep going?
I'm all ears. I got nothing but time.
No, that's it. That's it. I got nothing else. That's his one true skill, man.
Hey, that true skill gets him to not destroy my team. I'll run with it. Given the walks might not help my whip ratios, but ERA could help and maybe sneak a win here and there. Probably not, but we'll see.
I'll give you one more. Good volume. 153 innings, 159 innings each of the last two seasons for Singer too.
I'm pretty sure that's one of the reasons he stood out to me late in drafts is when he got late in the drafts, most guys didn't have volume where Singer had that built in. And Singer's the guy that just needs one more pitch to really develop him and still hasn't quite got there yet, but that would be a plus. Yeah,
no, you're right. Like the slider's really good, but he throws it almost half the time. One of the higher usages in baseball. Nothing else misses bats. So, it's going to be hard for him to get a ton of Ks. But yeah, I'm a little nervous. You're getting a little too happy over there. Let's move on.
All right. Well, I'll give you this one because you can roast this boy all you want. Lance Lynn. You even said it before the show.
You're like, can't stand this guy, man.
Yeah. 2.64 ERA, 10.6% swinging strike, 39.1. Like, this is what we wanted him to do all last year because all the indicators were like, he had the big ERA, but the indicators showed he should be better. All the strikeouts are still there. Never happened. Now he's doing the opposite this year. So I'm just going to give you the floor on this one. What's your thoughts on Lance Lynn, who has been literally, it's 3 earned runs or less in 5 of 6 starts.
It's just total BS, dude. Total BS. We were all over Lance Lynn last year, and obviously I'm still hurt about it. I'm happy he's doing. I have nothing against the guy, but personally, it's just crazy to see an ERA drop 3 full runs from 573 last year to 264 this year. Same whip. Exact same whip. Strikeouts are down from 24 to 21%. Walks are up from 8 to 10%. Whiffs are down from 13 to 10%. And ball rate is up from 36 to 39%. Basically, every metric that I look at, Lance Lynn has been worse this year than he was last year, despite having a 2.64 ERA. And it won't last, but I don't know. That's it. Got myself worked up too much. It won't last.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because I'm a big guy, so I'm allowed to say things like this. I've seen a couple Lynn starts. He looks bigger this year. Like the dude throwing,
I haven't watched.
He's like throwing in the towel, it feels like. Like he's like, I'm back in St. Louis, they paid me. I'm just gonna throw like my four different fastballs and pray they stay in the ballpark, and I'm gonna go eat the buffet afterwards. And like he's morphing into Bartolo Colon right now. It's as Sarah Sanchez speaks in, he looks 50. Yeah, he looks like a ragged old man out there. He's got the gray beard like I do. Like if we stood next to each other, it'd probably be a scary spinning image.
Look like bros.
Yeah, it'd be kind of scary actually when I start to think about it out loud. But I was watching a start the other day. I'm like, goodness gracious, how is this guy like making this happen? It's depressing to watch. And then listening to you vent, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun in that regard.
I'll have to tune. I'm still like, the reason I haven't watched Lance Lynn is because like I'm still scarred from last year. I don't want to bring up those memories, but now I gotta tune in. He looks 50. That's a great quote from Sarah.
And just wait until it's those hot, humid summer day games in St. Louis.
In those uniforms that they sweat through, dude.
You're gonna be able to like read the chest hairs on him by the time it's all said and done. It's gonna be amazing. It's gonna be great. It's pretty good.
Dude, I hope Nike makes that switch before prioritize the Cardinals first on that team list of uniforms you swap out.
I think it's so funny that they said they can't switch the uniforms till next season. I'm like, you're a multi, I'd say probably $1 billion industry potentially. How does this take a full things? But whatever.
They said as late as next season, which means
nearly next season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we will get to see my man just sweat it out this summer.
Could you imagine if Lucas Glover had to wear Fanatics jerseys? That's a golf term for
golf
those
fans. We'll get that one. Wow, that was a tough moment of his life. Winning, I think in Memphis was one of his first two wins in a row, and just went viral for
everything.
Sweating it all out.
Wore khakis on a hot, humid day.
That wasn't anyone's fault, but Glover's.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, I'll let you have the floor here. Anybody else you care to discuss? Because like Trevor Williams is pitching well. I've heard people actually stream him. Colin Ray, Andrew Abbott. I'm not worried about Zach Gallen, but if you have anything on these guys, I'll let you have the floor on this.
I don't think so. Like Zach Gallen on here is.
He started.
I'm not that worried. Yeah, no. I'm not worried. Velocity is down a tick, and we did talk about the extreme workload for Gallen last year, but 3.38 ERA, 3.34 Sierra. I'm not too. Not too worried there. Everyone else, yeah, I'm not doing Colin Ray. Andrew Abbott shouldn't have a 3.27 ERA. I actually have him in a couple draft and holds. I don't know why, but a 7% whiff rate and walks in Great American Ballpark is not a good combination. So Andrew Abbott, I think, is a pretty easy sell high. Yeah, and I don't know how Trevor Williams has a 2.70 ERA. That looks ugly. What about Spencer Turnbull?
Yeah,
we didn't talk about him, did we?
No, we can't. I kind of passed over him because he's supposed to go back to the bullpen after tonight's start. But then again, if Walker stinks again, you almost want to keep Turnbull in. So let's have the Turnbull floor here. 1.33 ERA, 10.1% swinging strike, a near 40% ball rate. That stood out to me the second I saw that because. Like if you look around and many people have talked about him, they picked him up. He's been great. There's no denying that. But to have a 40% ball rate and have the walks, like he's striking everybody out, but he's only walked three or more guys in two of his five starts entering tonight. So it's not like he's had a crazy, crazy walk rate, but he's dancing around it. It feels like so his pitch counts get up. It's probably why he's not going deep into games, maybe. But yeah. He's having like it's teetering on the possibility of getting blown up type thing.
Yeah, and it doesn't drive. So his Turnbull has a 28% K rate, and the swing strike is at 10.1. So when I said earlier, and I probably should have mentioned this earlier when I introduced the board, when I said swinging strike is like a proxy for K rate, just very loose back of thumb calculation. If you multiply the swinging strike by two, that would be like your K rate. And so if you take Turnbull's 10%, multiply it by two, I know you didn't go to college, but that's 20% strikeout rate. That's well below 28% K rate. Like it's very rare to strike out that many guys and not get whiffs. So that's a problem for Spencer Turnbull. And then some of the like luckiest BABIP left on base, you'll see 175 BABIP. That means it's just nothing's falling. And then anyone who gets on base is not scoring. So it'll be interesting to see what Philly does with
check with that Turnbull. Stat out. He had zero walks tonight, still only 61% strikes.
That's
so wild. For someone who didn't go to college, that's a 39% ball rate for those keeping track at home.
Damn, dude, I was hoping you like got it wrong because you sounded pretty confident in that, but you got it.
Math was my skill set, my friend.
And you never know, like maybe there's something to it. Like maybe you can buck that trend. I'm not saying, you know, swing, strike, and ball is, you know, for every single player, it's an indicator, but like, I don't know.
He's got a close to 48% ground ball rate, so he's getting close to that 50% tier.
Yep.
But we've seen this Turnbull thing before, and if he's and all it takes is one outing where he starts walking too many guys, and it just gets ugly quick, and then he gets the early hook also, which doesn't help things out. It's all over the board. So yeah, that's the only reason I skipped him over is because I figured he's going to be gone, but he might not because Taiwan Walker looked horrible in that first start. So we'll see how that goes.
Christopher Sanchez hasn't looked that great lately either. I hate to say it, but one strikeout.
A lot of walks. And like, what, walks. One whiff? Zero whiffs on Monday night?
I think he had one whiff Monday night.
Yeah. That ain't going to cut it.
No, it's not. He's had a 10 strikeout game. So maybe it was just an off night for Christopher Sanchez. But I wouldn't totally rule out if something's wrong with Christopher Sanchez.
Velocity was down, folks.
Yeah.
Joe Arrico had a nice tweet about the velocity down with a nice meme attached to it that stood out in a big way. So keep an eye on that situation as well. We'll see how that goes because anytime we see lower velocity, panic mode ensues. Make sure to keep an eye on that.
And this year, anytime you see higher velocity, panic mode ensues.
Yeah, we love the panic. That's the name of the game. Panic, and not Joe Panic, just panic. So,
I don't want any Joe Panic. What's he doing these days?
He's probably selling cars in North New Jersey or something. He went to Rutgers University.
Okay, I was like, why'd you? Okay,
yeah, Giants right here, buddy. I got you.
All right.
So, yeah, well, we'll wrap it up there, Bloom. Unless you have any final thoughts on all this, you know, Mike Trout is going to be non-existent for a while, unfortunately. Twitter's probably a buzz for the last hour we've been away, so that'll be fun. Final thoughts before we come back with our Fab preview on Thursday.
No, my one takeaway from this episode is I guess Lance Lynn is must-watch TV, so I'll be checking out his next start, reporting back to the pod what I see.
I expect you to be in your dungeon down there, turn the game on, watch it, and tell me all the goodies to come because see, I wasn't alone in this one when Sarah immediately comments on it as well. Lynn looks just ragged, man. It's a rough go for Mr. Lance Lynn.
Just hope it's hot and humid.
Man, like I'm telling you, like a July 12th game or something's going to be awesome. Absolutely. One of those where
4 o'clock local, just hot.
I can't remember what pitcher it was, but one of the pitchers on the Chris Rose rotation said that with the new jerseys, they're going to have to like – He said usually already he's a heavy sweater, so he has to like change at least once in the game his jersey. Yeah. He's all now I might have to change two or three times and change my pants, which I never do because the pants is the complicated part. You have to go all the way to the locker room where jerseys can just be hanging in the hallway. Yeah. So this is gonna be the white home pants with the white home shirt, Lance Lynn. I hope he's never mind. We'll leave that one to your imagination on that one. But on that note,
we'll end the show and continue the conversation.
On that note, make sure y'all check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Entrick. Thanks again for listening. As always, everybody, this was Bubba the Bloom episode 130. Catch y'all next time.